This is Drinking Wine, Talking Tech. I'm Jonathan Reichenthal, and you are?
And I am Tom O'Malley.
Hey.
Hey now. Jonathan, this is our last episode of this season.
I know.
Man, I'm trying to hold back tears.
Yeah. It crept up fast. Oh, my.
Yeah. I mean, lots of bottles.
Yeah.
I'm counting nine that were on the air.
Yeah. Hey, you know, your sound is very good today. I'm noticing some really improved audio.
Why, thank you. Yeah, this is this is a result of you being insistent that I upgrade my sound gear, and it's also a manifestation of my procrastination, which is here on the last episode, and I finally got the mic.
We took 10 episodes, but this episode is going to have the best audio, I think.
This is a teaser for the next season.
Because we're going to get soundproofing the next time and all sorts of other tech to make this even better. Mm-hmm. That's my quest. I don't have much interest in the actual content. My whole interest in this podcast is great sound.
Yeah.
That's all I'm after.
Yeah. For me, I just show up so I have another excuse to have a beverage during the week.
But it's been actually a very interesting season. The most extraordinary of our four seasons now. This was, to me, quite diverse, and we explored new topics. So I think today what we're going to do is do a little bit of a recap, right?
Yeah, no, I think it makes perfect sense. And yeah, we had great variety, I'd say. You know, before I forget though, Jonathan, if you could pencil down this one idea for next season.
Sure.
Our show is called Drinking Wine and Talking Tech, but we've never had a guest that is either a wine connoisseur or even developing technology for the wine industry.
Ah.
What do you think?
I like those. I like those ideas. And in fact, I do know somebody who has just joined a wine tech company.
Oh, wow.
So
do they call it Vinoteca? What is that industry called?
I don't know. Vintech.
Vintech, maybe. I know there's a restaurant called Vinoteca down in Mexico. So maybe that's the birthplace of Vintech.
That's right. Hey, what are you drinking today, actually?
You know me. You know, I'm a sot. So I went with the Tommy Special, the tequila and soda.
Nice.
And we have a guest in from out of town, from Mexico, in fact. So.
Oh.
I felt like it's going to be the beverage of choice throughout the evening. So I thought, let me get started on the right note.
Yeah. You've enjoyed tequilas and gin this season.
Yeah. Jonathan, I've been huffing glue and spray paint as well. I do whatever I can.
I'm glad business is going well. Otherwise I'd be really worried about you.
Yeah, no, I you know, whatever keeps the pieces together. So I do.
Did you have a can of cider at any point?
No, I think I can honestly tell you that at 6 o'clock on any day, I can ask myself and get a very clear answer from myself. Like, I never am on the fence. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? Is it a wine? Is it a vodka? Is it a gin or is it a tequila? And I just listen to my body.
Okay.
And I think it's a level of self-awareness that everybody should aspire to get to. But I have a hankering for things. Believe it or not, there are a couple of days a week I have absolutely nothing. You know, just water I do have my cleansing days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Since COVID, I'd say fewer.
I think that goes for a lot of people. That's true. Now I don't have any of the like discipline or good story about what I've been drinking. It's been totally and utterly random. But they've all been wines. And one episode I had a cup of tea for good reason. Mm. But so today I'm drinking, the bottle is called R. It's the R Collection. Oh, by Raymond.
Oh, okay. I'll
show you if you want to take a look.
Okay.
And it is a Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a 2018. It's a Californian wine. It's a pretty dark, 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 dark.
Yeah. Red.
I'm going to take a sip here.
Yeah. I'll take a sip with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always look forward to this because I, you know, I like, I mean, I don't drink that much at all. I hope the listeners don't think the two of us are just like drinking 24 hours a day. You know, this podcast gives me a reason to have a nice drink. And I haven't, you know, the whole day I've been working and thinking about the podcast. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a nice glass of wine this evening. And then when it comes, it's just so much better.
Yeah,
because it's been anticipated.
You know, you explain that to such extent, it makes me think you've actually been drinking since 10 a.m. and now you're trying to cover it up.
The person who sort of over justifies is usually guilty.
Justify too much. Yeah,
that's right. Hey, you've been reading a few books that you wanted to share with me.
Well, I wanted to share first of all with the crowd that I can read, and so that's number one. So thanks for pointing that out. There are, you know, we had Brian Solis on here, who I really enjoyed having. I thought he was just a great energy and had some really significant life scaling points, which now the word makes sense to me because I bought the book that day and I just love Amazon, man. Bam, on my door.
Remarkable. Know, remarkable.
Day. It's just amazing. Sometimes I forget I ordered stuff. Like Christmas.
It's always a surprise.
Yeah, it's like a surprise, especially if you buy stuff late at night, you know.
But that is a real thing, by the way. That's a real thing. People like receiving the box. You know, I've read about it. You know, I'm bad in that I do know what I've ordered. And I do know what's in the box, but I'm still excited. It's like, could it be something else that I have forgotten about? And it's not. It's the thing I ordered.
Yeah. There's such anticipation about it. You're right. But I got his book, and it's one of these books where my kids tease me because it's got so many visuals in it. And my kids at that middle school age where they're proud that they can rip through a 500-page book. Mm. You know, this is it's a thin one. It's a couple hundred pages, and it's mostly... it's got big words and or rather big letters and not such big words, but it's a great beach book. You can just rip right through it. But I can tell you one thing, since I've read it a week ago, I got an alert on my phone the other day that said my screen time was down 30% last week, which is a big theme of that book. His whole concept is gaining back control of your time, because this device and all of these apps on it are designed to consume your time.
Right.
And they have been designed with such science that the cards are stacked against you. Yeah. I've turned off a ton of notifications, both on my computer and my phone. And I'm constantly shutting down tabs. It's amazing. These things, these they just spread. You know, I open up a browser, an hour later, I have 8 tabs open up, and I don't know how it happened. So I'm getting very used to clicking the red dot in the upper left there and just shutting it down and starting with a blank slate. And that's really what it is. It's trying to be more mindful about where your attention goes and not letting the next vibration or ding just, you know, steal your attention away. And it's not easy. And that's just scratching the surface on what he's talking about, because it gets deeper into awareness around, you know, your family and other aspects of life.
Yeah.
But the first thing is to, you know, break the dopamine addiction, or at least, you know, become aware of it. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Well, that's great to hear. And he said during the episode that it saved his marriage.
That's
the extent of the advice. He, you know, following his own advice, he actually was able to turn his life around.
I can imagine. You know, it puts tension in the house. I mean, my kid, my youngest daughter, Megan, she doesn't have her own phone, which means she has everyone's phone when you're not using it.
Right.
Yes. So, and she's just constantly in the search of digital. And
right.
It's cute in a way, but then it kind of does make her kind of look like a little drug addict. So it's raised awareness for me. This book has become, I've pushed it onto the kids to say, look, just read the first 2 chapters, because in those early chapters, he breaks down some of the science behind, you know, how the apps are constructed to you know, steal attention. And again, I think awareness is the first thing. I'm not willing to give up my phone at this point, but but I do keep my voicemail full, just to have one less channel.
I was thinking about that, actually. We got to find a way to download that and record it for you, because I'm afraid you'll lose it somehow. And if you're if your daughter's messages are on there from when they were little kids and they got those cute voices.
Yeah, that's right.
We gotta capture that and get it off that phone.
You know, it's sort of like all these photos you take. They don't end up in photo albums anymore. I don't know what I would do with the audio. If I, you know, 10 years from now, no matter where I put it now, 10 years from now, I'd forget where I put it. So it's been on my phone for about 10 years. So I figure I'll just keep it there.
Well, if it's working for you, sure.
Yeah, it seems to be. But yeah, Jonathan, you reading anything? What's
Oh, I'm doing, I'm doing the other side of it. I'm sitting on the other side of the table. I'm writing. You know, so yeah.
Is anybody reading what you're writing?
Well, I think so. I do think so. Yes. You know, I'm a big data guy. Yeah. The data shows they're listening and they're reading. So because I'm so completely consumed with that, I'm doing a little less reading these days. Although when things are more normal, I do read a lot. I always have a stack of books that I've purchased and that are waiting to be read. And I got two books that are sort of in progress, and there's a third, in fact, that I just got this week. One is Tim O'Reilly's What's the Future? It's his thoughts on where we're headed. The other one is Sapiens. That was a huge success about the history of humans.
Yeah.
And that's quite. I mean, I love that the history of where we come from. But he's quite funny, the guy. He's an Israeli guy, but he writes beautiful English, and it's quirky. It's kind of neat, and the thing was a phenomena. The book is a phenomena. And then I have a new book called Miracle Mornings. Have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't.
So Miracle Mornings. Now I've only read the first three or four pages, but it was a recommended book to me. It's one of those self-help books where this guy figured out, you know, his life wasn't going well, his job was terrible, his relationships were terrible, all these things weren't going well, and he had to figure out what was going on. And one of the tricks that he learned himself and created was to have a routine in the morning that got him prepared for a much better day, and he was a better person. So I'm actually looking forward to getting, you know, some tips from it.
Wow, you know, that's actually I don't know if it was Brian's book or not, but it must have been. It was all about starting your day with something you enjoy, because it's so easy to just, you know, literally roll out of bed and take three steps, sit at your desk, and you're trapped for 4 hours all of a sudden. You know, the only reminder is to get up and brush your teeth, and then you realize a morning has gone by. But
right.
You know, I think it has a lot to do with just creating time, right?
Well, yes. I mean, the big lesson for me, sort of leaving, in quotes, corporate America about a year and a half ago, was the requirement to be really disciplined with my time. It is so easy to lose track. And to your point, you know, getting up, kind of rolling out of bed and doing bits and pieces before you know it, it's 11 o'clock. You know, before you know it, it's 3 o'clock. And so what I really put in place over the last few months is a little bit more structure, because I do enjoy the flexibility and the freedom that I have.
Sure.
So I don't want to make it like the office. I don't want to, you know, just be meetings back to back. And but I do get up at early now. And I try to jump into a series of activities that are routine for me, and I think that has made my days better in every way.
Yeah, you know, I live down here in Coronado, a block off the beach, and what I've been doing this week is I take a 4:30 team call, and I've been taking it at the water's edge. And I get off that call maybe around 5:15 at latest, 5:30. And I've just been swimming in the ocean with my kids and, you know, avoiding stingray bites, or stings rather. But it's just another world to go and, yeah, make that time. And you know, how many COVIDs are we going to have, you know, in a lifetime? You know, if you ask that question in the positive way of like, there are some amazing things that won't come back once this goes away, which is the ability to have this time with the kids and maybe more time to think if you can control it.
Well, I think that the kids that are anywhere from, I don't know, 4 through 12, when they're in their 30s or 40s, they will say, we had this magnificent time with our parents, with our dad. It was just the happiest days of our life. They will not know the terror and the economic devastation.
Yeah.
Just the simple disruption that we're all feeling and going through this. Nothing short of a nightmare. But the children will look back and will remember playing with you in the ocean and cooking with mom, you know, just making a cake, whatever it is.
That's right.
Cooking a cake with her dad.
Yeah.
And that's nice, you know.
Yeah. Actually, we've had to cook a cake with dad because the oven was broken for like 2 months. And my wife didn't want to have a guy come over and fix it. And so my daughter said, Dad, I bet I can cook this on the grill. And so we ended up baking the cake on the grill. So it became a dad project as soon as it moved to the outdoors.
So that makes sense. I've never thought about it. You can barbecue a cake.
Yeah, we've barbecued pizzas,
cakes. Boiled eggs.
Yeah, we fricassee the the eggs out there every morning in our robe, standing around the grill. No, we're we've since had the oven fixed, and it's one of these things where you watch the guy come in and fix it, and he undoes two screws, pops out this little dash, slips in a fuse, and you go, I probably haven't done that, you know.
Modern appliances, that's what they just replace stuff. They don't even try to repair them. You know, you've just come up with the most incredible YouTube meme or something. You know, you look at YouTube, there's this guy who, the whole thing is, he it's only for about 2 minutes or something, and he just eats things, like the weirdest stuff. And you just watch his expression as he eats stuff. And, you know, it's all non-toxic, but he eats the weirdest things, and it's hilarious. And then there's the guy who, you know, he puts different devices into a mixer and sees how long it takes to scramble up. So your one is, what can you cook on a grill? Like the things you don't think about, like sponge cakes.
Megan gave me the name of the show, actually. She said, Dad, we could do a whole show on this called Grilling and Chilling.
Ooh, she's smart. She should have whipped out her iPhone at the time and just filmed you.
I'm surprised she didn't. I might be a star on TikTok and not know it with my kids around with their phones, though. Who knows?
That's so true. Hey, let's take a look at some of our episodes and reflect on them. We'll just do this sequentially. You know, I'm very orderly in the way I think.
Yeah.
First one was just you and I launching season 4 after quite a long break. And we were talking about, in a time of COVID, how do you replicate serendipity when you can't meet anybody or bump into anyone, right? And we came up with this term, digidepity. And I want to tell you, and still to this point, that is the most popular episode.
I tell you what, Jonathan, and it's that term has surfaced all throughout the episodes. Mm-hmm. We were on to something back then. We were peering into the future. Mm-hmm. What date was that roughly? It was mid-March.
It was 10 weeks ago.
Yeah. So if my calculations are correct, that's November of last year when we predicted COVID and the need for digital serendipity, which we then called digidipity, or serendigity. I'm not sure, but no, we called it digidipity, which I think is, it's brilliant. It's so brilliant that so many big innovations have come out now to fill that spot. I know every once in a while you flick me a new link of a new app to connect people randomly.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote down a couple here. Swap Card was one I came across. I thought that was pretty good. You know, these are kind of online virtual forums that enable things like networking and breakouts. Yeah,
and that aren't dating apps.
Yeah, and aren't. Right. Even dating apps have had to evolve in this time of COVID. The other one I noted was Remo.co. Remo.co.
Yeah,
Just, I'm seeing these and I'm so conscious of this point about how do you replicate in a virtual world the things that the real world is good at.
It's not easy. And I was talking to an investor today, and he says, and this guy's very old school. He's mid-70s, and he's Midwest, and he talks plain. And he said, you know, the biggest thing is everybody's got their calendars so filled up with Zoom calls that what you're missing is that roundup after the meeting where you guys agree on what we're going to do next. He says, so what happens is everybody's talking, everybody's meeting, but nobody's getting anything done because there's no wrap up after the meeting to say, okay, Jimbo, you're going to grab that. Sarah, come back with this. And so that sort of action he and I were describing is just dormant right now. Deals are taking forever to get closed, even ones where everybody's already agreed to move forward. Now somebody just needs to go do the finer points and close it out. That's what I hear a lot from business guys today is that they're getting plenty of meetings. Access is not the problem.
Yeah.
It's actually getting action taken, which has something to do with serendipity. It's sort of the unstructured meeting post-meeting.
Yeah. You know, it's such an amazing point. I mean, it's a phenomenal point in the era that we live, and we have to fix that. I can't help thinking, I mean, who knew Zoom would be the one that would explode, right? There was already 25, right? And Zoom exploded. There really needs to be a sort of a plug-in ecosystem. I mean, Zoom has to open up to allow other developers to develop a whole suite marketplace of plugins. And one of them would be that, the wrap-up module, right? I'm going to download and incorporate the wrap-up module because I need a way after we've all smiled and said goodbye that there's commitments made and stuff documented.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was on, I was asked to be on like a focus group of Zoom.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. And I love this company. It's called Vidlet.
Okay.
And it's founded by the same person that founded Frog Design.
Oh.
And Frog is, you know, famous, right?
Sure,
they compete with IDEO. They've revolutionized user experience at the levels of Disney World.
Yeah.
She's brilliant. She's a German lady. Her and her husband created Frog Design. And she went off and created Vidlet afterwards, which does these sort of video surveys where you respond to the survey question with your, you know, phone camera in front of you. And so I gave my Zoom responses and I harped on that. I said, right now, Zoom it's like a consumer app, but it is not, you know, where's the integrations? Where's the plugins? Where's the APIs? How do you fit into this? Where's the community around it? Why isn't it white labeled? Why when somebody comes onto my Zoom, are they not seeing my business logo? You know, there's so many ways you could treat this as a platform rather than a tool. I'm sure they're working in that direction, totally agree, 100%.
Well, you know, Eric Wen, the CEO, I think he's the most surprised of all, you know. So after that show, which it was a big hit, we had our show with Zoe Ether from Australia. This season, we had lots of international people.
Yeah.
And she spoke about this idea of smart communities. She's really passionate about this. It's a topic I know a little bit about, you probably know.
Yeah.
And it was lovely to hear her passion and her story about how she traveled the world, getting exposure to and conversations with some of the world's leading thinkers on this smart communities movement.
Well, that I enjoy, definitely. Anybody that gets out there and actually does that primary hands-on research, I've got big respect for. So I did enjoy that about it.
Yeah, yeah. We had next Ian Kalin. Ian was our data expert, our data scientist, and just all-around polymath, very inspirational guy. He talked about his experiences sitting at the table with Barack Obama in the White House. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think about? I mean, you knew Elon. I'm sorry, you knew Ian coming into this, but did he deliver for you?
Yeah. I've always found that he is a person who has a lot to say, and what he says is good and substantive. And so he speaks fast because he wants to get all those ideas out. And I, you know, never mind being on a podcast. When I spend time with him socially, he's also that way. And yeah, I like that. His passion is so visceral. I was hoping that that came across, and I think largely it did. You know, at the end of the day, our podcasts are fairly short. There was a lot more we could have spoken about with him. But his ideas about, you know, the future of healthcare is so dependent on data science and how we use data now and will use data, coupled with, you know, AI. And I think that was well made. And, you know, he's somebody who actually was a practitioner in that space and, you know, healthcare and data. So he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
I thought that maybe perhaps those not in this field at all may be surprised to learn, you know, that data has that power.
Yeah. And then we had Michael Tversky.
Yeah.
And I had a little bit of a man crush on Tversky because, you know, he was so precise in the way he spoke. I thought he really delivered well as just a good speaking person.
Yeah. Very nice guy. And his episode was our second most popular, by the way, after Digiequity. Yeah. He talked about the touchless economy, you'll remember, right?
Very relatable.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, the first episode was we talked, you and I shared our views on where we're at with COVID.
Yeah.
That episode also touched on COVID. So I think the timeliness has made both of those episodes popular.
Gotcha.
You know, I suppose as well as the content. And you know, Michael, like you said, Michael was very extremely articulate in explaining complex ideas. And that's a real skill.
He spoke good.
He did. And I do keep in contact with him still. He actually sent me a note today, some good news on his company. So they're doing well.
Oh, good. Good to hear it.
We had Ian Cann from Canada.
Yeah.
Another Ian.
This is the guy that picks fights with historians, right? He's a futurist.
He is. A filmmaker. He makes documentaries. He's now working on his AI documentary. That was quite a diverse conversation, too.
Yeah. Blockchain is a passion of his. AI is a passion of his. We're still in infrastructure days on these technologies. So, you know, just to get your head around what's possible. I thought he did a couple, he made a couple of good, you know, brought it down, right? And made it tangible. So I thought he did great. Nicole Stevenson with the Kangaroos is going to never be emblazoned in my memory, because the fact that the Kangaroos are literally in the backyard while we're talking and the dogs are barking at them and ay, ay, ay. And the topic was privacy.
It is memorable. The idea that, I mean, she was sitting on the floor doing that podcast. Mm-hmm. We could see her backyard windows behind her. And there's kangaroos in her backyard.
Peeking in the window.
Scaring the dogs. And the barking. You know, apparently one of the dogs even looks like a kangaroo, which I thought was quite hilarious.
You know, what I remember about that is that I realized that the idea of privacy is really nebulous. And we've got a long way to go on this topic. And the risks are not well understood. But also, I think the aversity to risk, I think varies much more widely than companies and people anticipate. There's not going to be a one size fits all on this. I opened up to learn on that one that it's way more complex than I originally thought.
That was my takeaway too. Yeah, I like that topic. I like cybersecurity. I like privacy. Topics, they're, you know, if you're a technologist today, if you're a CIO or a technology leader, you have to be thinking deeply about both of those topics and acting on them. because she lives and breathes the broadest topic aspects of privacy, she took us to areas that, you know, I think neither of us had considered.
And then we had Sean Ness.
There was a crush from you. You fell in love with that guy.
I had some man love for this guy as well. You're absolutely right. I love the stuff where, first of all, he also was very articulate, but he was also very fun and lighthearted about it. He could paint a big picture and then also make it practical. And that's really what drives me, because I think, you know, big ideas that don't come down to, something that somebody can actually think about and take action to and have mental imagery for, I think it just gets lost in the ether.
Yeah. I like that episode too. Sean, is a business development guy over at the Institute for the Future in Palo Alto, a 50-year-old organization, non-for-profit, still successful today. And I think the thing that I took away was the differences between, you know, futurism, predictions, and foresight. I mean, what he talked about really was, you don't necessarily come to the Institute to have someone tell you the answers. What you do is you get a team of very smart people who can raise scenarios and challenges and issues, and it creates the basis of a conversation that then everybody collectively can begin to think about the different pathways that lie ahead for, you know, a company to make money or a company to grow or pivot.
I was surprised to hear how framework oriented they were.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bunch of hippies that would just, you know, bring out the ayahuasca tea and, like, you know, envision the future together. and you know, you kind of think like it's pixie dust and magic. What was great, refreshing to hear is that he was able to take our ideas and sort of pixelate them back into a framework and read them back to us in a much more succinct way. And, which was humiliating, because I kind of thought we had some original thinking going on. and once somebody labels your structure of thought, you go, oh, I fell into a trap.
Yeah. Well, you think about him, his role as business development lead. He has to convince the likes of General Electric and Lockheed Martin that there is a structure that delivers value.
Gotcha.
That's repeatable.
He's a con man. You call him a con man then, huh?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I had a follow-up call with Sean. Oh, and cool. I think he's a delightful human being person. And I hope we do have him on again, just because of that really smart, structured, but also he was playful. He really fit well into the mojo that we like to create. So my shout out to Sean.
Yeah, good friend, great guy. We talked a little bit about life scaling and we had Brian Solis on next.
Yeah.
You liked him?
Yeah, I think you already liked him. You really pumped him up prior to the meeting, and I thought, okay, well, let's see. And man, he delivered. I just love the fact that, first of all, he's coming as the head of innovation for Salesforce. So holy smokes, I'm a little bit nervous, right? My palms are sweating a little bit. and then he comes in and talks about screen time and controlling your thinking and driving awareness. And I just thought it was somewhat brilliant that, you know, he could have come in and talked about a lot of different things and been passionate about a lot of different things that might have been really highbrow about where where Salesforce is going and where, you know, customer interactions are going. I just love the fact that that was a real human.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely, lovely man.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just recently joined Salesforce. Mm. So what he delivers ultimately is ahead of him. And I'm looking forward to see what that is, you know, what form it takes and how it manifests, you know, in terms of Salesforce and also, you know, in terms of consuming its content. It should be interesting. And then we ended with our guests, with your friend, Lynn Power.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm just I'm a power fan of Lynn's. She's I think I explained on that, you know, I just love people that are ever curious and not afraid to you know, get into something that they have no business getting into. Mm-hmm. And I just like the Lynn that goes right into beeswax in in a Caribbean country. She goes into seaweed in northern Japan, just fearless, you know. But when it makes sense to her, she just moves, and I admire people like that.
Yeah, good stuff. And I learned so much from her. You know what's interesting, about this podcast that we do together, after we record it, which is always a lot of fun, a few days passes, and then I edit it, and it takes me a few hours to clean it up, but I have to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm
and
sorry
I have
about
to
that, bud.
And I have to listen to sections multiple times because just to make sure it flows and everything. And whilst we were doing the podcast with Lynn, you know, we had a few technical issues and sound issues. You know, I could sometimes get a little distracted, but when I'm editing, I'm totally in the moment and I'm listening. And she said a lot of really cool things, and I missed them during the podcast, but I picked them up. And it's everything from, you know, just life in, you know, Madison Avenue in the 70s and 80s, or maybe the 80s. And the sort of, she talked about, you know, the horrible sexism and harassment she had, and she kind of talks about it quickly and moves on, and you realize these are big important statements that are so meaningful today, and there was just a whole lot of nuggets like that, which I'm so grateful that she shared, and she covered so much ground.
Yeah, you know, she sends me a couple of big ideas every week that make me like rethink things. So just really a great energy, a great force in my life. She's an investor in my company. She's a friend, you know, so it was fun to have her a part of this.
Well,
so
I certainly hope she enjoyed it as well.
She did. She wrote back immediately, and she said, Jonathan wasn't as bad as he said.
That's good. So we are coming to the end of season 4, and it's been a labor of love for me.
Yeah, well, you do all the labor, and I love it.
That's right. That's the equation we have.
The balance is, Jonathan, you've yet to pour me a drink.
Yeah.
That's the balance. You know, when you pour me a drink, then I'll take on the editing.
Yeah. Okay. Deal. You know, the phone has been available every episode. We've not received a single call, which is disappointing.
You know, I'm beginning to think that maybe we've been giving out the wrong number.
Could be.
We'll have to check that.
But I do want to encourage our listeners to engage with us on Facebook. facebook.com/drinkingwinetalkingtech. I'd love to see some activity there.
Yeah. What kind of activity would make you feel good, Jonathan? You want
ideas and suggestions for wine and guest suggestions. And
okay.
Like to see a little community around our little baby podcast here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe we need to focus on driving more community. How might we do that? You think we should start doing the show topless?
Well, you know, I've always said you have a great face for radio.
Yeah. You know, what about, maybe we should put out the supplemental video, because we've been aggregating some video content here.
For sure.
You know, my dog was just on a minute ago.
We've had kids. We've had kangaroos and dogs, other dogs. We've had the sound of geese. I don't know if we saw the geese.
Yeah, maybe we should be doing grilling and chilling, drinking wine, talking tech, all in one.
That's right. Well, I could do a little what's that? What do you call when you put the bloopers together? I could do a bloopers
reel
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like. Like that time the neck of the bottle got caught in your throat.
That's right. So, you know, you and I were having this conversation prior to recording today about, you know, as we take a break here for who knows how long before we do season 5, you know, what might happen to the world? What's going to, I mean, we're just in such a period of turmoil.
Holy smokes. I feel like we're abandoning our listeners. I mean, we may not see you again, folks. You may not hear of us. This is 2020. Mark the date. What are we? July 16th? 15th. if you don't hear from us, the world has ended. but Jonathan, when might they hear from us again? When are we back on the air?
I don't know. Well, if we follow the model of network television, probably in the fall, right?
Yeah, because that's worked out so well. The whole network television model, that's worked out well. We should model after that. You sure you want to model after the sundial?
I'm really convinced that, you know, video cassettes are coming back. This whole sort of streaming concept, I think it's just a period of hype.
I mean, you can't even make a tape for a chick anymore.
A mixtape of your favorite songs?
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, of course. I did it many times.
I used to pour my heart into these things.
Yeah.
You know?
They would tell a story. That's right.
They would. They were, yeah. I mean, how do you do that? What are kids doing now? They just send songs and emojis.
TikToks,
yeah. They're flapping their arms. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, TikTok might be gone by the time we get back together.
It might be called TikTok back then, or then forward.
But do you think we should be optimistic or pessimistic for the next 4 or 5 months?
Well, let's just say this.
Okay.
We are in July. We still have August, September, October.
Hey, you're teaching your kids, by the way. I heard yesterday.
Yeah, the kids are actually, you know, daughters are so much easier than I was as a kid with my two brothers, Eddie and Kevin. Right, we were knuckle draggers. We could not figure out how to get the homework done and get it turned in. And you know, Jonathan, am I shocking to know I graduated with a 1.8 GPA from high school? Mm. That's right, folks, 1.8.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's
for
just
our, for our international listeners, that means nothing.
Yeah, that's like a 30 pulse.
Okay.
That's 30 beats per second. So anyway, it just wasn't I don't want to say that you know, girls are superior to boys. I don't want to, you know, have a bunch of write-ins. I don't want to have too much interaction on our Facebook. But
yeah, remember that 72% of our listeners are male, and that's a real data point.
I tell you, Jonathan, when I was a kid, sixth grade, I remember I asked my dad. I said, "Dad, why are girls smarter than boys? They do their homework. They turn their stuff in on time. Their handwriting is nice and neat."
Did he say?
He said, can't get anything done.
He said, "Talk to your mom."
No,
she knows.
No, he said, "Son, it's because they brush their hair. It stimulates their brain. You never notice how they're constantly brushing their hair." I said, "Yeah." He says it stimulates their brain. Of course, he was, you know, joshing.
Yeah.
But he also knew that I didn't know he was joshing. So, for a couple of years there, I had the coolest looking hair in school.
Does that explain why you have like really long hair now?
No, now it's just sheer laziness, and it's kind of a middle finger at corporate America to say, I'm at home now. Leave me alone. I can look like this.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you were telling us whether you were optimistic or pessimistic.
Yeah, I was trying to get back there. I went on a couple of tangents, but boy, this tequila sure is good, Jonathan. I tell you that. You know, the way I see it is, let's say we're getting back together and we're bringing the band back together in November.
Okay.
Okay. So we got August, September, October, and then November, 4 months. Look, who knows, right? We could just say that, who knows, but if I go with gut instinct, intuition, okay, I'm feeling like the voices of science are going to prevail on this. You know, I don't expect Americans to act like Europeans. I do expect a lot more polarization, but science will prevail, because in the end, when you see both infection rates and hospital rates and death rates operating in parallel, you're going to run out of excuses. mm-hmm. And then, you know, the stories are getting closer. I don't know if you have felt this, Jonathan. Have your friends been telling more anecdotes of who's got it and who's died and who's been impacted? Because I have.
Of course, certainly, absolutely, yeah.
No, and I think that's what drives change. I think as this thing moves closer to individuals and there's more anecdotes, because that's the only thing that sells in America these days is anecdotes. So yeah. I think it's the anecdotes and then the science will gain reputation again because of the anecdotes. People will go, you know what? I've been looking at it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So I think the COVID thing doesn't change. I think the silver linings exist. We just got great news today about a vaccine that seems to be working. Moderna.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm generally an optimist. I think things have to get more sane. I do think desperation by some people are going to amplify into a big puff of nothingness because I just don't see how the political environment, how the scales remain even seemingly balanced at that point. I predict an implosion on the Trump party. I'm not even saying Republican party because, you know, I'm all about, you know, conservative spending, but I'm a social liberal and I'm a technologist. I don't damn the Republicans. I damn the anti-science. And I think the anti-science movement is going to come to an end here.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm all for that. Let me throw in my two cents here. Well, I generally...
Hey, Jonathan, can I have the pleasure of asking you, what do you think?
Go for
it. Hey, Jonathan. What do you think? What do you? I'm dying to know. What do you think?
Okay, I'm gonna assume you genuinely want to know.
I actually do.
Okay,
but I'm embarrassed that I didn't provoke the response. I'm over here pontificating, and you're being patient. Like, okay, wrap it up, O'Malley.
Well, no, look, I really...
I know. You're too polite.
No, I want to know what you have to say.
You avenge on the edit room floor, I know.
So I just cut the whole thing out, that's right. And, but, I mean, I are always towards optimism. I really do. Anyone knows me. You know me. My friends and family always know that I'm try to look at the better side of things and always work towards the upside. This is going to be a difficult time, you know, even for an optimist. You know, we gotta work extra hard to put our chin up. I do think we have a little bit of a perfect storm ahead of us, and you know, you gave the timeline through November, and of course we have a little thing going on during the first week of November that's kind of a big deal. So we have a really nasty, intense political season ahead. We have a pandemic that is largely out of control with no rail guards, and we have an economic crisis. So the forecast, I think, is actually going to be quite rough in my view, and that's going to mean people will lose their jobs. We're going to see economic bumpiness like we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, there's no quick fix. You know, even in the best case scenario of your point about a vaccine, and the news is good, not conclusive by any means, but good. You've got to develop it in mass. You got to have people take it. You know, so there's a long road ahead. So I do think that people need to be thinking about, you know, something I believe strongly in, which is lifelong learning. You know, think about the new things you can learn, the new skills you can develop, because you may be forced to retool yourself and actually start a completely new career when you had no plans to do that, you know, last year.
Yeah. You know, Jonathan, you're right. I think this is going to be, it's going to cut deeper than people anticipate. We haven't seen Q2 numbers come out. We've seen and heard about big cutbacks. Wells Fargo, Nielsen, which is a good bellwether of of advertising, which is a huge portion of the economy, you know, these, you know, banks are going to feel it first, right? And so the canaries, you know, that you're going to look at here in the next weeks as Q2 numbers come out are going to be telling a lot of companies close quarter, believe it or not, at the end of July, just for tax reasons. So I think you're right. The next 4 weeks, holy smokes, we're going to start seeing some news come out about what is the longer term implication of the economy. You're right. There's no way to even get your head around it. But I will say though, that I'm again, optimist on the fact that it's not a bad thing. What it is an accelerant for the individuals going through it. You and I that are going to live through it. It could have huge implications to our business, our revenue, our families, and much more to others, I'm sure, that are in more vulnerable industries and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we are in a time, Jonathan, I mean, they can go take your class, you know, among hundreds of thousands of other classes online. So infrastructure exists that didn't exist in, say, you know, 1929 or, mm-hmm. or other times to retool. I think we as a society can retool faster than ever.
Yeah, I like that point. I like that point a lot. And, you know, just to have us end on a high note, if it's possible, and kind of bring it back to the...
Is that what you're saying? This is smoking dope and talking tech?
I was very pleased to see a debate on Twitter in the last 10 days of, I believe they may have been Canadians or Australians, talking about the idea of you know, drinking wine and talking about tech on a podcast. And I sort of weighed in and said, you know, that's our podcast. That's what Tom and I do.
And we do.
And they were very humorous. And one of the tweeters, I know she was a woman, she came back and said, well, they're going to drink more and call it drinking more and talking tech. Like that.
I love it.
But this podcast is about innovation. It is about being on the front seat of Silicon Valley. And I do think, as you've mentioned a couple of times during the season, that the opportunity for breakthroughs and for transformational innovation is now. You look at World War I, World War II, the Cold War, you know, great periods of despair. And you look at the other side of it and you're like, wow, there was a sea shift.
More millionaires made during the Great Depression than any other time in American history. That stat still is true. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I had to go research it to figure out if that's true. And it held up on a couple of websites. No, but I think that is the silver lining. I think that is the point, is that it's time to be creative. There's many more channels that exist today that are just evolving, or maybe need to evolve, you know, through this. So it's exciting.
I'll use my cliche, which is, when those innovations happen, they'll be so obvious. I wish I could think of them right now, you know?
I know. I know. It's so painful when you see something and you just smack your head. I tell you one thing, Jonathan, that's been driving me nuts. Here's one prediction.
Okay.
Tesla will be at 2,000.
What is it right now?
1,500.
Whew.
But when it crossed 1,000, people went bananas. Mm. You know, it's got the highest, what do you call it, market cap of any automotive company.
Right.
What the world's going to realize is this is not an automotive company. This is an energy company. Mm. This is a data company. This is your iPhone mixed with mobile transportation, mixed with energy and how you power your house. I can't be more bullish about Tesla.
Okay.
Yeah. There's the stock tip. Now we're giving stock tips.
How about that? Yes. Don't take our advice. That's the legal
That's true.
Disclaimer.
There's probably a legal disclaimer that would come in right now and be like, no, Tom's been drinking, so please do not do anything.
We are not in any position to give advice on anything. These are all humorisms.
That's right.
Funny. So that's it. That's it for season 4.
Man, I'm drying an eye.
What are we going to do next Wednesday?
Well, That's true. I'm not gonna tell my wife that I'm not doing the podcast. I'm gonna be in here talking to somebody while I'm drinking. Don't blow my cover, Jonathan.
I then presume she doesn't listen to the podcast.
No, that's right. No. My wife would never listen to this podcast. She gets enough of it around the house.
Oh boy. Yeah. She lives with a perpetual Tom O'Malley podcast. That's right.
No. And she's seen me talk tech and drink wine way too many times.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Jonathan.
Yeah.
I am Tom O'Malley, and I've been drinking wine.
Awesome. I'm Jonathan Reigenthal, and I've been talking tech occasionally. Okay, see you next season. Thanks
a lot. Great season, man. Thanks a lot.